give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up.
What's good, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street. Your boys from the Draft Act NBA Draft Podcast. However, today's a special Draft Act episode because we're doing a little mini-sode, a little side episode called Draft Knicks. So, you know your boys from New York, and I love the New York Knicks fandom. The New York Knicks, I'm impartial to, but the fandom has adopted me as one of their own since I started covering the draft. And I feel a connection. So we're going to talk some New York Knicks throughout the rest of this draft process. And we had to start it off, Rucker, with the number one Knicks fan in the world. Spike went to Brooklyn. He lost his title. The number one Knicks fan in the world is my guy, CP, the franchise from Knicks Fan TV. CP, what's good, brother?
Yo, fellas, man, always a pleasure connecting with you guys. You guys are doing big things. This is a pivotal time for all the teams that haven't, you know, made the playoffs. I mean, yeah, made the playoffs, all the lottery teams, Knicks fans included. You know, we're always highly anticipating the draft coverage. So keep up the good work.
Appreciate that, man. I mean, shit, we've been working together now for a couple of years come draft time. It's, you know, 2020 first cycle. Draft time is when we really, really connect, and it's about to heat up. We're about to do some fun stuff. So,
yeah. I would just say for me, man, you know, because I cover the Knicks on a 24/7 cycle, like I really don't get into college basketball as much as I'd like to, except for like when the tournament starts. So we really rely on your expertise, and you guys are doing a great job. Alex Morante's been on my show a couple of times as well. I think he's a sharp guy. So yeah, man, what you guys do is really valuable to the community.
Before we start, you know, for the people, you know, my audience who aren't familiar with what you do, you are like the media game changer in the content space, the independent content space. So just fill in the audience on what it is Knicks Fan TV is.
Yeah, so Knicks Fan TV, it's just about bringing the fans together, man, to react and comment on the team that they love, you know, to give them a platform to voice their opinion, whether it's good or bad, whether it's, you know, toxic or overly, you know, homeristic, if I can make that word up.
Yeah.
You know, they just want that platform to vent. And, you know, through the wins and the losses after every game, they come to my platform, Knicks Fan TV on YouTube, and we'll cover the game. We'll break it down. We'll break down the stats. And then, you know, we'll take our phone calls from the fans from all around the world. And, you know, that's a benefit of our show. It's that it's a sports radio built for the digital age. That's what I like to call it. You know, Corey, as I always told you, I came up on the mic in the Mad Dog era, WFAN here in New York. That was the flagship station for sports media. Every show now, whether it's First Take or First Things First or Skip and Shannon, they all owe their success, their content format to Mike and the Mad Dog. These guys started in the late 80s. So, you know, that was a program that I came up on as a kid, just listening to the radio. You know, when I wake up, listening to it, when I go to sleep, just a fanatic of that type of coverage. And I, like I said, I just wanted to build that for the fans in the digital age on the on-demand cycle. And it's been taking off ever since.
It's crazy. All the people in the content space, all the kids growing up, you know, Mad Dog's been in the news lately, and everybody's like, who's this dude, Mad Dog?
Yeah.
It's like, pioneer is who he is.
Yeah. And I'm reading those comments, and I'm like, you know, I laugh, and then on the other end, I'm like, damn, I'm getting old, bro. I'm getting real old, man. Nobody knows who this guy is, and I'm watching him every day. Like, first off, I think it's crazy that, you know, he's on the First Take platform because he always used to be kind of like the anti-Stephen A. But, you know, Mad Dog, like you said, he's been a pioneer in the game. He's got, you know, his own channel on Sirius XM. So very successful for sure.
What was it like taking over the Fan?
Dream come true, bro. I still can't believe I even did that. You know, to host my own show on the Fan with my own producer looking across on the other side of the glass, sitting in the chair where Mike Francesa sat, you know, where Craig Carton and Evan Roberts do their show. It was a surreal experience. I still can't even believe I did that. Honestly, man, I still cannot believe I did that because, again, that was the station that I would try to call in to get my takes, could never get through. And here I was, you know, sitting at the helm and manning the con on my own show and taking callers in. It was I just, you know, I was blessed to have that opportunity. It was incredible.
Man, I feel you on that. Like, doing some of the stuff we've been doing lately at No Ceilings, getting in some of these like pre-draft workouts, there are moments where it's just, I'm like, shit, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy on the phone screen watching this. Like, this is me. So I as a New Yorker, like me too, growing up listening to The Fan, I mean, seeing you do that was, you know, one of the coolest things, you know, that I got to see in a long time as somebody who, you know, you're my guy. Before we get into draft stuff, you broke out a little CP bomb yesterday, right?
Yeah. You know, as I always say, you know, sometimes I'll get little tidbits during free agency, during the trade deadline, and now during the offseason. Like, what I tell fans is, look, I'm not in this thing to be an insider, right? I'm a content creator. I host a platform for you guys to come in and talk Knicks. We'll do interviews and so on and so forth. But when I do get intel, I'm going to share it with the fans. And so the intel that I got was that, you know, Adam Silver is very aggressive. They're going full steam ahead on an in-season tournament. And the basis for this is they want more casual fans watching the game. They want to make the regular season a bit more enticing to the casual fan by having an early in-season tournament to kind of get those people into the fold, you know, earlier. It's a revenue idea, and again, a way to continue to grow the game and get more casual fans into it.
Rucker, what do you think? Do you like the idea of a midseason tournament?
You know, it's funny because I think a lot of fans out there always get, I mean, myself included, we get scared when it's the new ideas. We're old fashioned. We like the typical old school system, but you know, we're also the same fans that hated the play-in tournament. And this year we were like, man, the play-in tournament's great. We love this. Like the drama, the anticipation. So this is sort of an idea I feel like it's been brewing with the NBA, you know, kind of taking a page out of the overseas. Like they do this in football. They do this with the EuroLeague sometimes. So I'll be interested to see it. I definitely think, you know, like we're saying, revenue, it's going to bring more viewers. It's going to bring more interest. So I'll be interested to see what happens. But yeah, I mean, the play-in tournament, I thought it was a terrible idea. And now I'm like, this is great. I love it. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see what it's about.
All right. Sticking with the overseas theme, CP, Rokas.
Yes.
Yeah. Over there. Yes. My Lithuanian brethren. Talk to me. What's the pulse on Rokas? Is he coming over next year or what?
You know, the EuroLeague Player of the Year, as announced today. You got to put some respect on his name. I had a chance to speak to him last year during Summer League. I was very impressed with his limited outings with the Knicks Summer League team. I thought he came in there very poised after his first game and, you know, just trying to get a feel for things. Obviously, he was a fish out of water, but he seemed to gain confidence as the games went on. And so I liked his approach to the game. And, you know, right now he's over there in the ACB league and he's tearing it up. What we did hear was that early this season, he said that he wasn't going to come. He wasn't going to come over and play and that he was going to stick around maybe one, maybe even 2 years. And I think that may be better for him. You know, I think based on where the Knicks are right now, I think this next season is really pivotal for Leon Rose, Tom Thibodeau as well. I don't think they're really in a position where they want a young, unestablished point guard manning the helm. I think they want some more experience there. They want to try to, you know, recapture the magic that was their first year together and try to get some more wins. This past season was a bit of a disappointment for them. So I think this is a big season for Tom Thibodeau, big season for Leon Rose. And so it may be better for Jakubaitis, who's tearing it up in the ACB league, to continue to do that, continue to gain some more experience until he can, you know, be guaranteed a more established role here with the Knicks.
Yeah, I remember that quote, him saying, like, he didn't want to, like, they had Kemba and all these guys, right, Derrick Rose, right, in front of him. And he's like, what am I going to go to sit on the bench for? Rucker, what did you like about him last year during the draft?
Yeah, I was really intrigued with him as a prospect coming into the draft. And I think, you know, he's going to be a guy that I really do believe can contribute at a high level in the NBA whenever he does come over. I think, obviously, you know, we want the Knicks to get a point guard. You know, all of the fans in the basketball world, we want the Knicks to have a point guard. They've been struggling. They need to get someone that can run it. I think thinking maybe Rokas could be like your starting guy might be a little rich,
right?
But yeah, he could be a really nice piece. Like, he could be a very solid addition to your rotation. So I think it's going to be smart. You know, he definitely had a big year with another year of development overseas. But, you know, like we're saying, I think it's going to be smart if the Knicks try to almost look the veteran route in free agency. You know, maybe they get lucky and get a Jalen Brunson. Maybe they can get something along those lines, because when you try to keep gambling with the rookies and the young guys to fill that void, you can run into some dangerous, you know, places.
Yeah, I think this is a high pressure situation this third year under the Tibbs regime, Leon Rose.
Right.
I think it'd be unfair to kind of bring him in here. Like I said, this is a big one for Tibbs. So I think they will lean on the veteran route at the point.
So CP, what's the pulse on the point guard position? Because if you go on Twitter and you try to make a recommendation that doesn't start with IQ.
Is this the quickly hour? Do we officially reach it 10 minutes in?
You better run and hide.
Yeah.
if you try to say that quickly ain't that guy. So, I mean, you know, I know you got guys in high places. What's the pulse? Like, does the team believe that quickly could be the starting point guard for the New York Knicks? Or do they think he's like this change of pace guy off the bench who's going to be like more of a Lou Williams type guy?
See, I think it's the latter, but it's just interesting because, you know, starting this past season and really starting from Summer League, we start our show from Summer League and we're in it, you know, as delusional fans, right? Watching Summer League with great intensity and trying to see, you know, who's going to be worth it at the regular season level. But, you know, really just watching quickly from the Summer League, his interactions with Thibodeau and the coaching staff, you could tell he was really trying to work on his game as a point guard and as a playmaker. And even though he had some tough stretches early in the regular season, he really struggled, especially shooting. But you could tell he was really trying to think out there of when to get himself involved, when to get his team involved. He's kind of forcing the action, not really sure of himself. But he ultimately settled in. And especially in the second half of the season, quickly as a playmaker was terrific, man. He was pushing the pace. He was getting his teammates involved. He's getting into the paint. He was drawing fouls. He really had a solid command of what Thibodeau wanted out there on the offense. And even though he didn't start, he kind of took on that D Rose role off of the bench and really running that young second unit with Toppin and Quentin Grimes when he was available, Cam Reddish when he was there, Deuce McBride. You know, they would have Deuce McBride playing off of Quickly and Quickly really taking the reins there. The chemistry between Quickly and Obi has really evolved from last year into Summer League, into the preseason season, and so on. And so, you know, Quickly's definitely taken that step. If you look at whether it's the eye test or the advanced metrics, the team is a better team when he's on the court. But you just didn't see him get many starts. He had 2 starts last year. So, again, I understood it in the way that, yes, when Rose went down, we needed somebody that you can count on to get the second unit involved. But I just felt like the way that next season went, they missed a lot of opportunities to really give him a longer evaluation as a starter to see how he would mesh with RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle as well. So I'm not so sure if they're going to hand the keys over to him. Knicks fans certainly want that based on what's out there and what the possibilities are. But I'm not so sure where the organization stands, because up until the 82nd game, Alec Burks was your starting point guard, which was just a head scratcher. Even when they were eliminated from the playoffs, it was still Alec Burks at the point.
Yeah, what's interesting is Quickly historically is the type of player that Tom Thibodeau values, gets the most out of. I mean, you know, Nate Robinson, John Lucas, like these small guys who can get buckets and aren't necessarily like these big time playmakers. Like Thibodeau has always gotten the most out of those guys. Mm-hmm. I think at the beginning of the year, it felt like Quickly was pressing a little bit, like he was almost trying to play the role that the team wanted him to play. And then you saw him at the end of the year get comfortable in that role. And that's when you saw him take off. Part of my thing at the end of the season that I get a little worried about And like, I even, you know, the end of the year, like Davion Mitchell was putting in work, like giving dudes the business. But it's like, how much of that is really the development of the player, and how much of it is like, dudes are resting, it's the end of the year, teams are tanking. Is there any fear that like, it's a little bit of a mirage with Quickly, or do you think that this is kind of the momentum that he should take to go into year three and like get that starting role?
Yeah. Yeah. I can see what you mean. And especially later on in the year, you know, he had a triple double against the Magic, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. He had another solid game against the Raptors, who were basically resting everybody. So yeah, you kind of have to take the competition into consideration. But on the other hand, I also felt like, you know, the game seems like it slowed down for him in certain respects. And on that West Coast trip, he had a couple of solid games. And the game in Miami, against Miami, with no Julius Randle, with the team down by 20 points, I mean, he was the lightning rod of that comeback on both ends of the court. I forgot how much he scored in that fourth quarter, but he was pivotal to the Knicks getting that win against a solid, solid Miami Heat defense. So I think it was a mixed bag in terms of the competition, but he certainly, as you said, especially in the second half of the season, he certainly seemed to get more comfortable and get into a groove.
Yeah. Now you talk about his chemistry with Obi. Obi came on the end of the year. This is a guy, he came in a tough spot. Because, you know, when the Knicks drafted him, and I remember, like, we were doing the draft show that night, and I felt like we didn't think that Obi was even going to be available to I think we were thinking maybe Cavs, Obi falls, and then Julius Randle has this out-of-body experience for a year straight. And he was on the way out in at the end of 2020, right? Like, we thought that he might have been on the move. He gets the extension, and now it puts Obi in this weird spot where – the Knicks are locked into this guy who was an all NBA type player. He's on this long-term deal. Who knows if they can get off him, but Obi's the kind of guy who needs to get on the court and play. And he's got this pressure that he was a lottery pick who was a little bit older, but then he finally started showing the flashes. My question is, Julius Randle back next year, Mitch comes back next year. We'll see what happens in free agency. But if he comes back, where does Obi fit in to the Knicks next year and in the future?
Honestly, I think it's the same. I think it's the same as it's been. You have Tom Thibodeau as your coach who values rim protection and has shown very little in terms of experimenting with smaller lineups because of his perceived defensive issues. And I think there are defensive issues when Julius and Obi on the court. You know, some people will look at this small sample size that says, yes, it's a positive net rating when they're there. When I see them out there together, it doesn't appear that way. I think it could be more so Julius Randle's defensive deficiencies in terms of playing at the five rather than Obi Toppin. And so I don't see them coexisting on the court as long as Tom Thibodeau is the coach. And what we saw from Obi Toppin, as you said, is he needs reps. He needs minutes to get going. He's not a guy that can just, you know, be instant offense off the bench in, you know, 9 minutes a game. He needs 20 plus to get going. And what we saw from him, the stark contrast as a starter, he was averaging, you know, 17 plus with those minutes, getting him out in transition, attacking the rim. You saw very confident Obi Toppin when he got those minutes, and he admitted it to the media in a media session, saying that when he was a starter, he didn't really have to look over his shoulder at the first turnover, or the first defensive lapse, right? And Tibbs was always going to take him out and put Randle in. Obi didn't have that. So he was able to play more loose and play more free. And it showed out there on the court. But the dilemma is that you gave Julius Randle a max contract. It doesn't appear to me that despite his lackluster season this past season, doesn't appear to me that they're going to trade him just for anything or trade low on him. His values can't get any lower right now. So I think they're in a big predicament with Obi Toppin. And if they do bring back Mitchell Robinson, or even if they don't, I still don't see a way that Obi Toppin and Julius Randle are on the court in extended minutes where you're really, really getting the most out of your eighth pick.
And that brings me to the first draft point I really want to make. A lot of people think that the Knicks' big issue is point guard, and that's what they need to find in the draft. And I kind of think the Knicks need to modernize the roster. I think they need guys who can play up and down the lineup, versatile wings that aren't just going to be, oh, well, Obi can't really play because Julius is there. You know, Julius, really, you're playing him at the four. Mitch, you're just playing him at the five. You know, even quickly, like, he's really just going to guard ones in a playoff setting, right? Like, he's not big enough to switch up. I think the Knicks got to get versatile. They got to get wingy. You know, I know a lot of people want Cam to be that guy, but I don't know. Rucker, where are you at with Cam? Because to me, I watch him, and he's the same player, the same frustrating player that he's been since he graduated high school.
Yeah, I think we're seeing exactly every year we're getting drunk with the idea of, like, look what Cam can be when he's rolling, and then it goes away. It, like, disappears. It's like a giant tease. And when the Knicks traded for him, I was like, what a great move. Like, go get an asset with high potential for basically nothing. I felt like it was just an absolute steal. But, you know, Tibbs is Tibbs, and he's a mad scientist. It wasn't working. It hasn't really clicked yet. So I don't know. I'm probably the exact same way as Knicks fans. I'm frustrated watching it because I was like, that is going to be a steal next to RJ Barrett. That's exactly what the Knicks need to take the next step forward, kind of get back on the right track. And now you're still having some unanswered questions. It's kind of the same story we were just talking about with Toppin and Julius Randle, where you just don't really have that certainty. So still a little bit frustrated. I imagine CP and Knicks faithful are still in that same boat too. So I don't know. What about you guys?
Extremely frustrated. And I think Corey hit it on the head. It's positional versatility that we're lacking. When you're talking about roster construction and building a roster of complementary pieces, we just don't have that. You know, Fournier at the three, RJ at the three. We need positional versatility. Look at the guys in the playoffs. It's Tatum. It's Brown. It's Giannis. It's Kevin Durant. It's
Mikal Bridges.
It's Mikal Bridges, right? You have Luka Doncic. Like, you need guys that can go out there and that can guard twos, threes, fours, maybe even a little one. You know, Mikal Bridges can get out there with his long wingspan and make it tough for opposing point guards. The Knicks just don't have that. And that's what I was really looking forward to in bringing Cam Reddish in here, to see if, you know, he can be that guy that we can use his length, use his athleticism. We don't have enough athletes on this team. And especially on the defensive side of the ball, we just don't have that. Offensively, as you said, you like the flashes, right? And to me, he was the only guy watching him. He was the only guy that can get to the rim without needing a screen. You know, that's one thing with RJ. He can get there. He can use his power. He can use his strength. But Cam could just get there with that quick first step. And that's the athleticism that I think we're sorely missing on this team. You look at a team like the Raptors, it seems like every guy on their team can do that. You know what I'm saying? I always dubbed the Raptors the wing factory because they got guys and guys and guys that just come out of the woodworks, but they're so versatile. And we just don't have that. So I think that's one of the key positions that I'm looking for in the draft, to see if we can get that. And as Corey said, really modernize his roster, because it's just not there right now.
Yeah, I wrote about that concept of the Raptors for no ceilings. What would Masai do in this draft? And when I'm looking at draft prospects, one of my draft philosophies this year, what would Masai Ujiri do? Right. And so, speaking of the draft, like, I know you've been, you know, doing a little bit of draft work yourself, a little research. It's that time of the year. Are there any guys in the Knicks range right now? The Knicks are at 11. We got the draft lottery coming up. So maybe there'll be a little bit of lottery luck. But are there any guys you've had your eyes on that kind of fit that bill of versatility?
You know, it's tough, man. I really like Mathurin. I love Mathurin out of Arizona. I thought he had a solid NCAA tournament. Right now they have him between, you know, the 6 and 8 range. Not sure if the Knicks can jump up there. You have guys like a Johnny Davis. Again, I'm not, you know, he's more of a two guard. But again, that type of scoring ability is something that I think the Knicks could also use in their starting lineup. I want to get your take on a guy like a Jeremy Sochan, though. You know, a lot of people are hyping up this kid, Jeremy Sochan, out of Baylor. What do you guys think about him?
So, first of all, I don't even know if this is the right pronunciation, but it's either Suhan or Sohan. We don't know yet.
I've said it wrong all year, so don't worry about it.
My strategy is I switch it up and say yes. Both ways.
Be right both ways. Both ways. Yeah.
So what? First thing I'll say, great hair, cool tattoos, British accent, clean up in New York. He'll be at the club. He'll clean up. But I love Soha, man. Like this kid, super young, right? Big, strong, physical, and like you said, versatile. You watch him closing possession against UNC in the tournament, isolation on the guards, shifty guards in North Carolina. And he's like, cool, like I got this. I'm on an island by myself. Don't worry, I don't need help. Like, I'm gonna use my length, my IQ, and I'm gonna force you into a tough shot on the perimeter instead of blowing by me. You want to switch a more powerful guy, try to bang in the post, you're not moving me and I'm long. So I love that versatility. And, you know, you watch some film from, you know, some of the international stuff with him. And there's a little bit more wing ability that you see there that maybe he didn't get to show at Baylor. The jump shot's questionable for sure. And I think when you put him in a lineup with RJ and Mitch and Julius Randle, it's tough. It's tough there with the spacing and what that offense could get a little clunky.
Yeah.
But he's the type of guy you take a shot on. Like, he's that OG Anunoby type mold, that Patrick Williams. And he's honestly a guy, you know, and I was trying to figure out who it was going to be this year. Cause we, you know, every year we see the top five, the top six, top seven set, right? The consensus, like these are the guys. And then all of a sudden there's somebody who shoots up the last week or even the night of, right? Even Scotty Barnes last year was a surprise. That he went above Jalen Suggs. Suhan's a guy that might be that guy who sneaks up into a spot where he goes a little bit earlier than you would think. Once teams start getting him in for workouts, they see what he's like physically. I bet he shoots the leather off the ball in an empty gym, right? Like, I don't know. Rucker, what do you think of Suhan? Do you think I'm headed in the right direction here?
Yeah, I think if CP, you are looking for versatility, that's going to be Sohan. Like, he can do a little bit of everything. The outside shot's coming along, but he's that nasty defensive Swiss Army knife that can switch and hold his own, and he plays tough. He battles. Knicks fans would love him in a hurry. It would just be figuring out if you're getting him, what are you doing with the situation where it's Randle and Toppin and all of that. They would have to have a clear kind of solution.
We haven't mentioned Taj yet. Taj ain't going nowhere, guys.
Taj is playing for another 10 years. My man's got the Fountain of Youth, and he hasn't told any of us where it's at.
Taj was talking more minutes than Obi at certain points.
He's a fine wine. He gets better with age, I'm telling you. But
Brooklyn Zone.
But I love Sohan. I think he's going to be a realistic option. It wouldn't surprise me if that's a Tibbs guy, because he just plays nasty. The hair's obviously electric. He's a couple leopards away from being the Dennis Rodman of the modern era. So I really like him. I think there's definitely some serious upside, and I could see Knicks fans not being in love with that idea, because it's like, maybe we have other needs, but he's nasty. He really can do some special stuff on the defensive side of the ball.
It's really hard to figure out, you know, what is a piece that can come in here and really help this team, because the starting five is so clunky, man. Your top two guys, they don't shoot threes over quite well. They don't finish at the rim quite well either. And then you have Mitchell Robinson in there, who is not a spacer, you know, not a floor spacer. So he's not helping things. They need to open things up for RJ and Julius to even get to the rim. So it's just really, really difficult right now to figure out like the ideal fit that's going to help complement what this starting five, at least three, right? Because, you know, you said you have Fournier, you never know what's going to happen with Fournier. But for right now, you have RJ Barrett, you have Julius Randle, and I think most likely they will bring Mitchell Robinson back. They got to figure out how they're going
to
build it.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Brown that.
And that's why I think Knicks fans should start getting hot and heavy for Dyson Daniels.
Yes, they should.
I was going to ask you about Dyson Daniels.
He came to the right place.
I think Dyson Daniels answers so many of these questions that we've been talking about. Because one, Knicks fans want a point guard. He ran point for the G League Ignite in, you know, playing against pros. And he didn't look out of place. He looked comfortable. Mm-hmm. Two, according to our guy Mike Schmitz, he's grown to 6'8". Now, you know, I saw him in January, and I don't know if he looked 6'8". He's got a long neck, so I don't know how to judge that. But apparently he's 6'8". And whether he's 6'6 or 6'8", he's still a big, wingy point guard that's versatile, probably the best perimeter defender in the class. And he could dribble, pass, shoot. You know, you look at the three-point percentages on the surface. They don't look great, but, you know, shout out to our friends at Instat. Last 10 games, he's at 41.5%, I think, or 40.5% from three. So clearly it's something that he's working on, was improving throughout the season. And, you know, sometimes you got to trust your eyes, and the shot looks good. And he knows, and he said that what he's working on now is speeding up the release. But he could play off the ball, letting RJ handle, create, letting Julius have the ball, create. Or he could play on the ball and create for these guys, run pick and roll. With Mitch, run it, you know, with, you know, Julius, you know, all, any kind of elbow actions. And he works as a cutter. I don't know. I think that if there's one guy, the Knicks, like if you're looking for somebody who Tibbs will play, fits the roster construction to a T and can kind of patch up a little bit of these holes, I think Dyson Daniel might be the guy.
And, you know, that's the size that Tibbs likes, right? This is why Alfred Payton was your starter. This is why Alec Burks was your starter, because he wanted those bigger guards, guards that are switchable, that won't get killed on mismatches out there. And on the offensive side, as you said, given that RJ Barrett and Julius Randle are ball-dominant players, they're going to be high-usage players. You need a guy that can both play off of them but also be able to make a play when you need him to. And that was, again, a big issue with the Knicks at the point. And this is going to be Julius Randle's fourth season with this team. As I said, I think he will be there with this team. They still haven't found a guard that can make him better. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a huge problem when it comes to Julius Randle. You know, he's not KD. He's not LeBron. He's not a guy that you just want to dump it down and rely on him to get you a tough bucket. Teams are allowing him to do that, knowing that he's not highly efficient. He was one of the worst shooters this past season, and teams know that. And we just have not been able to get him a guard that can get him something in rhythm and make the game a little bit easy for him. And I think that's going to be crucial if he's going to be on this team going forward.
Man, everything's hard, right? Like everything was hard for him this year, and those shots were falling. And when they're falling, it looks good. But it started. You saw in the playoff series, and then it carried over. I mean, what does that guard look like? What kind of offense does that look like to get him easy shots? Like, you know, are you using him as a role man? And if you are, then what are you doing with Mitch? You know, is he taking up space in the dunker spot? I mean,
that's the tricky thing, because I think another thing that the Knicks could use is a stretch five, you know, and doesn't have to be a Miles Turner necessarily, but somebody that can keep the defense honest. Again, look in the playoffs right now. You look at a Brook Lopez, you look at an Ayton, right? You have guys that can, you know, knock down a mid range, knock down a three if they need to, with Mitchell Robinson, and he works on it. You know, I'll give credit to Mitch. I go to Knick games, I go to the pregame shoot around. Mitch is working on his J's. He's trying to work on that aspect of his game, but it's just not there right now. So, again, this is where Leon Rose has to decide. Is it worth paying him knowing that, you know, it's still kind of a clunky fit with Julius Randle, your max guy, and RJ Barrett, who you're going to give a max contract to down the road? Are these the three guys that you really want to have as the pillars of your starting lineup for, you know, the foreseeable future?
It's tough because you don't want to lose that asset for nothing. I think Jericho Sims showed some real positive signs last year, but I don't know if he's ready to start at what's probably one of the most important defensive position in the league, you know, like, and again, Tibbs, if you're not going to be perfect on defense, you might get pulled. And you saw Tibbs get frustrated with Jericho a lot, missing, you know, rotating over late. So I don't think he's ready. So I think you almost have to pay Mitch and maybe you figure it out later. But again, that makes it hard. That makes it hard because it's hard to work that offense around. Because ideally, I think Julius has the skill set on offense to kind of play a little Draymond-y. You know, I think he's a good playmaker. I think you could do some creative stuff like that with him, but it's all about the personnel. Rucker, is there? There's not even a stretch five in this draft that like the Knicks could even be targeting, right?
No, I don't think at their range, because I think the Mitchell situation is going to be fascinating with Mitchell Robinson, because I was like, I had some weird dream of like, what if they were interested in Mark Williams as like a cheaper option that could almost kind of replicate that? Because I know Mitchell's really talented, but I've also known he's dealt with some injury concerns like over the years. He struggled to stay healthy. So I was like, if they don't want to pay him, maybe that's a wild outside of the box option they might bring in, because he's lengthy, plays really tough defense. Tibbs might love that. But, you know, they're in a tough spot where I feel like the option is the Dyson Daniels or getting a compliment for RJ Barrett, where that could, they could space the floor, get him some more offense, get everyone some help. Because, you know, I'm right there with Corey. Like, I think Julius Randle has a ton of talent. I just think he gets a little hero ball. He gets a little like, okay, I got to get rolling. And if he has more help, where more offense, more contributors, that makes his life easier. He could slide better into that Draymond role that you're talking about, Corey.
Yeah, and he needs to get stuff like some easy buckets. He needs things to be easier for him, because he's also somebody that we've seen gets in his feelings a little bit. And look,
just a little bit.
And we got somebody on the show right now with firsthand experience of dealing with the Randle family.
Yeah. I would say they're not fans of Knicks Fan TV. You know, when the show when the game goes off and the show starts, we have other players and families who tune in. You know, Mitch is a friend of the program, Quickly's as well. You know, Quentin Grimes and his camp are fans of the show. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but as you said, you know, I think the pressure to win, the pressure to redeem after an embarrassing series loss to the Hawks. You know, you're getting that max contract. I think a lot of that weighed on Julius Randle. And on top of that, you know, Knicks fans are impatient, man. They don't care about what happened last year. This year is this year, and they want to see results. You brought in the guys. You brought in Kemba. You brought in, you know, Fournier. They were supposed to make his life easier. They didn't. And I think, again, there was a lot of pressure on him to produce and perform for this team. And, you know, the boos started going on, and he's a guy who's heavy on social media, and I'm sure he saw a lot of fans directing their frustration and their ire at him. And after seeing that, you know, his wife aired me out as the ringleader of all of this, you know, the puppet master, if you will.
Heavy as the crown.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, look, I think this is a tough place to play. I've known that since I was 8 years old watching this team. I've known that since, you know, I was hurt.
Kyrie don't know it.
Kyrie certainly don't know.
He's ready to call it a Knicks town.
Yeah, that's why they went out. And you know, look, I saw what they did to Patrick Ewan. I saw what they did to Carmelo. I see what they're doing to Julius. That's just what it is when you're the guy. And Julius claimed to understand that 2 years ago. You know, he went on Bleacher Report. He went on Old Man and Three and talked so highly about understanding the expectations of Knicks fans and understanding what, you know, how things would change if they won here. But it's different to, you know, when you're winning and things are going well, but when you're losing, it's a whole nother thing. And I thought that really mentally drained him. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he bounces back from that, because what we just talked about, Obi Toppin has captured this fan base. And what I'm telling you is, if they get off to slow start, or they get off, you know, a below 500 start, and Julius is, again, you know, not hustling on defense, not getting after it on the boards, taking terrible shots, making bad decisions, they're going to turn on him again. I don't think there's any way around it. And they're going to be chomping at the bit to get Obi Toppin back in there. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how that next season starts off.
It is going to be interesting, because Knicks fans are passionate, man. Like, and that's why I always give credit to Carmelo. And when anytime like Knicks fans would, you know, be talking about Melo, the type of player he is, he's this, that, I always say he took the challenge on.
Never
he wanted it. He wanted it. He wanted the smoke. And it's, unless you're in it, involved in it, you're from New York, you grow up listening to the fan, you hear these people calling in, a lot of the passionate fans that are not fanatics, that are maybe a little bit more casual, but still have that you know, enthusiasm for the fan base and aren't seeing the daily. Like, he took that and he wanted it, and he never wanted to, you know, run from it. So I always give credit for him, and this is the most successful teams that the Knicks have had, you know, with him. So those Melo years, that's, you got to find the next Melo. If you want to be like, you got to have that mentality. If you want to play in New York,
got to.
Pivoting back to the draft a little bit, we're talking about floor spacing. I want to throw a little wild card at you, Rucker, because I know you like this guy a little bit. And he just came in at number 14 on on the draft stock market update that we released at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Malachi Branham.
I was literally just about to ask CP about Branham. So you're reading my mind right now. I think that's the name Knicks fans should start getting familiar with, because I think he's going to be a realistic option there. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes before. I think a lot of NBA teams are really getting intrigued with him. But the idea of putting him next to RJ Barrett is really fascinating to me, because he can space the floor from outside. He's got a quick shot, good catch and shoot. He's really dangerous pick and roll, and he's got playmaking upside. So it's kind of like an RJ compliment that really can stretch the floor. Like, he's got a quick release. He really can get hot from deep. So I think that's kind of the outside the box option that if I were a Knicks fan, I would get educated on, because he's real upside to be a lethal volume scorer. Like, I love Mathurin there. That's probably my dream for the Knicks, because, you know, I'm tired of seeing him in the lottery. We want to get out of the lottery.
You're an Arizona guy.
Yeah, I'm an Arizona guy. I love Mathurin. He's made for the Knicks. He'd be perfect for you guys. But, you know, Dyson Daniels, I think Branham should be up in that mix too. I think he could be a really great fit with that team, especially with what they need. And Branham also has that versatility where he can do some special stuff on both sides of the floor. So,
Well, let me ask you this. I definitely got to do some more homework on Branham, but the way that you described him, we took a guy last year in Quentin Grimes.
Oh, yes.
That was an excellent three-point shooter, quick release, you know, jumped onto the scene when he got his opportunity, season high 27 points against the Bucks. The defense was certainly on display, carried over from Houston, the shooting excellent. And he showed a little bit of playmaking. I wouldn't say, you know, it was anything crazy, but I think that was one of the things coming out of Houston that we wanted to see if he could do, right? Could he put the ball on the floor? Didn't attack the rim enough for me, but could he put the ball on the floor, and could he make some more plays? And he did that a little bit in you know, his few games with the Knicks. How do you think those two guys match up?
I think they could play together. And I'm glad you brought up Grimes, because I think Grimes is one of the guys on the Knicks that is that kind of versatile, can play in a multitude of lineups. I think he's a guy that I would consider somebody that is a building block going forward. And it's funny, I just went on Locked On Knicks last week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were like, one of the questions that they had gotten for us was like, basically include the young players on the Knicks with the prospects in this draft and try to like make a big board off of that. And the Locked On guys, because I know Knicks fans love their Quickly, they had Quickly above Grimes, and I had Grimes above Quickly because for those reasons, I see him as a guy where I look in the playoffs, I'm like,
yeah,
is this dude going to get played off the floor in the playoffs?
Right.
And I'm like, I don't think so, because he's big, he's strong, he could defend, he's going to shoot it at 40%, and he could play off of any kind of lineup. If you could play him with Julius Randle and RJ Barrett, if you move Randle and you get another on-ball creator, you could play him there. Maybe he develops a little bit. And it's funny, because Grimes is a guy, when he was coming into college, he was a projected one-and-done guy in Kansas, like top 10 pick. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he doesn't even have the pedigree to be one of these guys. Like, he always had that pedigree. It just took a little bit. What did it take, Rucker? It took a little bit of time. Sometimes it takes time. But I think Grimes is a building block, and I think Branham's a guy who could play alongside him, because, you know, he's another guy that could play with or without the ball, and he's another guy that's going to space the floor. Like, this dude, he's always shot ready. Like there's like a few possessions that you just watch of this kid where EJ Liddell got the ball in the post and Branham's literally waiting there like this. Like, I'm ready. Kick me that rock. I know you're about to, I'm ready to put it up. Let it fly. Like no time. So I'm with it. Like Branham is a guy, St. Vincent, St. Mary, high school, you know, from Ohio. I think he's the type of guy, like Rucker said, Knicks fans need to get familiar with because he could be a realistic option there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny on the Grimes quickly thing. We set up a fan mailbag for our last show, Knicks Weekly, and one of the questions was if the Knicks were to consolidate the roster, which they likely will, and it includes their young players, who would you pick between Quickly and Grimes? And I said the same thing you did. I said Grimes because if you look at the playoffs,
yep,
a guy like a Grimes is what you need. You know, the positional versatility, big, tough. Doesn't need the ball. You know, he can fit in any lineup. He can fit with anyone. Playoff ball, like look at him like a Connaughton almost with the Bucks. You know, a guy that doesn't need the ball, that can stretch the floor for you. I think I would choose a guy like a Grimes over a Quickly if they were to make a consolidation move. I love Grimes' game.
Yeah, and I really like Quickly. So it's not like I'm trying to, you know, say that I think the Knicks should get rid of him or anything. But again, it's like, it just comes back to when you watch the playoffs, and that's the ultimate goal, right? You know, like at least getting back to the playoffs, that atmosphere. I mean, you know, the Garden is untouchable in the playoffs. There's not an atmosphere like it. I went to last year to ignite this Brooklyn Knicks rivalry a little bit. I went to KD toe on the line game against Giannis last year.
Yeah.
The highest level of basketball I've ever seen in person. I bought tickets day of, after fees, $75.
I don't even know if I
can't get through the next playoff. I can't get to the metal detector for $75 at the Garden.
You can't even get to the gift shop, bro.
So, you know, like, I mean, that's the goal for the Knicks. Get back to the respectability to the Garden, hopefully build a championship team. And it's just easier to do that with a player like Grimes, who can just fit in a multitude of lineups. And again, like, how many guys is Quickly going to guard in a playoff setting?
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's not, he's not going to try. He's going to try and he's long, you know, but in a playoffs, it's not Jalen Suggs and Cole Anthony that you got to guard. It's Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. You got to switch on to, and that's just a different beast.
Right. And it was funny you said that, just to wrap quick on Grimes, you know, and Middleton, and you brought that up. That was, you know, when Grimes had his career high against the Bucks at home with the 27 points on the defensive end, you know, Middleton was really schooling him. You know, he was going for all the ball fakes and, you know, really had him flustered. And then they played the Bucks again in Milwaukee. Didn't have the same offensive output, but I was watching him intently to see how he would adjust against Middleton and did a much better job. And then the other thing about Grimes is that, you know, if you want to build an identity on defense, transition, and takeaway, you know, Grimes is that guy. You know, again, just looking at that Knicks defense and how, you know, poor so was, we didn't have a lot of takeaways. He gets in there. He's jumping in the pass lanes. He's a disruptor is what I'm trying to say. So he's a guy that, you know, when you want to establish an identity, he's a guy that you want. You know, he's a guy that you want in that rotation. And that's why Tibbs loved him. And I don't think he's coming out of it. Once he's healthy, the knee injury kind of derailed him a little bit in terms of finishing the season strong. But next season, I think he's going to be right back in that rotation.
Yeah, I agree. Wrapping up, we have to bring it up. We got to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the tension's in the air. There's some flirting with fan bases. Donovan Mitchell. What are you hearing?
Well, he was definitely at the Mets game like last week, and one of my homies hit me up. He's like, Mitchell's here. He's holding court like he's the mayor of New York. So, you know, when he comes home, he makes himself at home. But then Tim McMahon of ESPN came out with an article and really talked about how much the Jazz are invested in Mitchell. And Ryan Smith, the young billionaire owner, and Dwayne Wade, they're traveling to Connecticut every year to meet with Mitchell to kind of have an off-season debrief. Or a season debrief, if you will. They've made, you know, moves to make him happy. They've hired his personal trainer. They've hired his personal security. The signing of Eric Pascal was a Donovan Mitchell request. So clearly it seems like, you know, they really want to do what they can to make him happy. Between him and Gobert, I think if they do make a move to make this Utah team better, it's certainly going to be Rudy Gobert, in my opinion. And I think they'll give the Mitchell experiment a couple more years to see it through and see what happens, you know. But Danny Ainge isn't afraid to shake things up if he has to. You know, Danny Ainge is also in that organization now, coming from Boston. So you just never know with Ainge. But I think where Mitchell is and with the Knicks, with 3 years left on his deal and a fourth-year player option, he has no leverage. Mm-hmm. And the Knicks have no leverage. And so if he was really adamant about leaving Utah, which we haven't heard that yet, it's going to cost the Knicks arm and a leg. And it's not going to be Julius Randle. You know, it's going to start with RJ, probably OB picks, probably quickly as well. It's going to be a huge hole. And so I think that's the question that, you know, Knicks fans are presented with is, you know, would you give up a huge hole for Donovan Mitchell? I'm not so sure from there just yet. I think a lot of fans have soured on him after this playoff exit, which I think is a little foolhardy myself. Yes, his defense had fallen off, but this is a guy, he's taken his team to the playoffs every single year since a rookie.
50 burgers
in the playoffs. A rookie in the West.
Yeah.
And that team isn't overly talented. They're not overly deep, but they're a solid team, well-coached team. But he's been at the forefront of getting them to that spot. We don't have that here.
No. And it feels at least a year early, right?
Right.
You know, like, and, you know, I understand wanting him because he's a little different than some of the, you know, the Steph, the Steve Francis, like the let's go get the guy. He's entering his prime, if anything.
Right.
So, but then the other side of it is the Knicks are notorious for not developing their own talent.
Right.
So I think it's a year early. I think they'll get rid of Gobert. They'll move on from Gobert. And if they don't, then you start talking about an in-season thing. Cause there's some beef there.
There's a rift, man. There's a rift. 100%, bro. 100%. Like,
so it's clearly there. It's got to be a shakeup, but it feels a year early. I think that ultimately we start hearing that heat up a little bit more next year than this offseason. But again, if he makes a request, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
So if he does make the request, hypothetically, what do you think? Is it worth it? Give up the farm? Stay the course? What are we doing?
See, what you said a couple of bars ago is why I'd be leery to do that. We haven't developed our guys yet, man. We don't have a guy. You know, a lot of times when you see these blockbuster trades, guys are coming into situations where there's at least one guy that you can say, okay, here's another guy that can help bail me out in the event that I have, you know, an off night. It's another guy that can take the shine, can take the spotlight, can be a premier shot creator. Look at the playoffs, man. You need shot creation. You need a pull-up bag. And look, RJ is my guy, but he doesn't have it yet. And he's working on it. And he was trying to work on it last year. You take a look at what Drew Hanlon said in his mailbag. They're working on it. Shot creation. We just don't have that right now. And so to give up everything for a Donovan Mitchell plus your extra draft capital, you're coming back here with an empty cupboard, with an empty slate. Who are you getting after that? That's the question. And who are you trading to get that piece if you have to give up most of it already for Donovan Mitchell? We just haven't established additional young players so you can be comfortable saying, if I lose an RJ, if I lose another guy, we still have this guy here that, you know, Donovan Mitchell can play with and then build from there.
Yeah, because it seems like the trend now is the big-time free agent guys, they're getting the biggest bag from their team, and they'll just make the request later.
They're all taking the money.
They're taking the money. There's too much money out there to not take the money, right? And if they say, all right, if I want to be moved in a year, they'll move me. So you get Donovan, like you said. So what? Now you have some cap space, but that might not get you too much the way the free agency is looking now. Last question. Was the envelope frozen?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's frozen. It just makes sense. You know what I'm saying? It just makes sense. With David Stern taking over the league, trying to get New York back on top. It just makes sense. I'm buying the frozen envelope conspiracy.
I'm telling you, bro, we gotta do an investigative pod serial style podcast about this.
Yeah.
And go find all of the old people, do some interviews, do our journalistic duties and figure this out once and for all.
We got to get to the bottom of it. We got to get to the bottom of it. But I believe it. I really do, bro. I really do. And look, it almost worked. It almost worked. For a long time that this team was a competitive, tough team. Patrick Ewing, phenomenal basketball player. And leader of this team, he put the franchise on his knees, put it on his knees, the ice wraps and everything. We just felt short, man.
I got a Patrick Ewing story. My family moved to Orlando for a couple of years when I was like 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. He's an assistant coach. Got Dwight. My dad was working at Best Buy. I stayed here or whatever, but I went and visit one time. He's like, we're going to the Magic game. He's like, through Best Buy, I'm getting you on the court during shoot around, during warmups. So I'm sitting on the Magic bench. I'm watching Pat go, just do one-on-one stuff with Dwight. My little brother, probably like 12 years old, my whole family, Knicks fans. My little brother's wearing a Clyde jersey. Goes and asks Pat for an autograph. Wrong move. brushes him off. Little 12-year-old, right? Ain't getting it. No. Yeah. Pat's locked in. So I'm like, that's fucked up. Like, this is my little brother. He's a little kid, So a ball rolls over to me at one point. I'm on the bench. And I throw a laser bounce pass right in the back on the money. I hit him. I hit Patrick Ewing with a bounce pass when he wasn't looking. I made sure I dodgeball style.
So you never got the autograph, but you beat
Honor him. Road, nah, we didn't get it. Not no. They was a clap us back to our seats after that.
That's funny as hell. Yeah, that was one thing, man. He was never really so friendly with the fans, and he wasn't really an autograph guy. That was the thing with you.
But
ferocious player, but
all-time Nick, all-time Nick, with the best knee pads.
Yeah,
CP, I appreciate you coming on, man, chopping it up, letting the draft world into the world of the Knicks, because, our audience, they follow, for the draft talk, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the teams that these guys go to and how they fit and what they're already building and how they mesh into the world. So, we appreciate you coming here and giving your insight. Number one Knicks fan in the world, taking over the spot. Spike got to give up his chair soon.
Got it. He's got to give it up, man. He's got to give it up. I'm coming for those seats, Spike. But now, fellas, like I said, this is a very, very important time for us Knicks fans, and we really value the content that you guys are putting out. So anytime I could come on to support, I appreciate it. We're going to have you guys back on my show to do a draft deep dive. The fans really appreciate it. And, again, looking forward to it.
Tell the world where they can find you on the World Wide Web.
Yeah, absolutely, man. YouTube.com/KnicksFanTV. You can follow me on all social media at CP the Franchise. And like I said, thanks again for having me on.
Throwing shots at Max Kellerman. He's been ducking you for a minute.
Yeah, he's been ducking the smoke, man. But yeah, shout out to Max. That was an epic confrontation, man. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, you came out the victor. Rucker, tell the people where they can find you.
I'm at NoCeilingsNBA.com, and I'm at Backcourt V on social media. CP, thanks for coming on, man. I had a blast listening to your Knicks fandom, and I'm a Knicks fan of the lottery now. Let's get some magic. Let's get up there.
They need the lottery luck. You can find me at Corey Tulliba on Twitter, NBA Draft Dude on YouTube, No Ceilings TV on YouTube. Hit 1,000 subs today on that channel. So, nice. Start cutting the checks, boys. And
Rookie of the Year.
as we said, NoCeilingsNBA.com. Subscribe. It's free. Delivering articles to you Monday through Friday and sometimes Sunday right to your inbox. So appreciate you all for rocking with us, for watching, for listening. And give a thumbs up for the boys.
Yeah.
Peace.